The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball, and welcome into another episode of Clown Takes. It was another week of poor Red Sox baseball, which means more clown takes emerge from the cesspool that is Twitter and other places as well. And we've got plenty of gripes to get out about certain things that we saw this week. So I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Mass., is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
Looking forward to roasting Terry's recent take.
Yeah, we've got some bastard-on-bastard crime coming on later on, which should be pretty fun. Also, as Jeremy alluded to on the show, Terry Cushman from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. How are you, sir?
Ready to ardently defend myself against Jeremy's feeble onslaught.
Should be a good one. Should be a good one. Before we get to that, I'm going to put myself in the leadoff spot here because I got a little fired up on our regular show. We were doing our bottom five of the Tampa Bay Rays series. Obviously, the Red Sox dropping 3 out of 4. Just a lot of potentially winnable games that they let slip through their fingers. So a very frustrating week. And I just kept seeing a theme recurring on Twitter. And there were multiple people involved, but I'm going to single out this one individual. And admittedly, he kind of makes himself an easy target. He's, you know, Mr. Fanboy of the Red Sox. I'm going to call out Tyler Milliken because he has this tendency to ignore all the bad stuff and just, you know, hyper focus on the good things, which I get it. He's a positive Red Sox fan. He's an optimist. He, you know, wants the team to be good and, you know, all that. But we're more realists on this show, and I don't need to see highlights of Sadon Rafaela making a diving catch in the infield and throwing a runner out at first base when he's making sloppy errors at shortstop. He's diving for balls in center field that I know had a 940 expected batting average, but he still botched it, and it led to 2 runs scoring that ultimately cost you the game. And by the way, the diving catch that he showed, it was a diving stop when the infield was pulled in. He threw the runner out at first, but the runner from third scored, and it made it 5-1 Rays in a game that you ultimately ended up losing. So it's more just – I kind of went hard on Rafaela in our other show, and a lot of my frustrations do lie with Rafaela, but it's mostly with just that section of Red Sox fans that just like, yeah, okay, so the ball that was hit to center field had a 940 expected batting average, which don't get me started on advanced stats like expected batting average. Like, how could you possibly know? How can you whatever, who cares? So, all right, so you have, what, a 5% chance of making the catch. Okay, he still didn't make it. You're in the big leagues. I expect you to make plays. You just got an 8-year extension. I expect you to make plays. Like, yeah, that sounds harsh, but you got to make the play. And that ended up costing them a bunch of runs because it bounced off his glove and a bunch of runs scored off of that. You ended up losing that game. But we're going to celebrate almost catches now? We're going to celebrate, well, you know, it was really hard and he only had a 5% chance. I don't care. They lost. Like, I do this stupid thing, and I know it's archaic and it's caveman of me, but I look at this thing called the scoreboard and I look at standings. So when the Red Sox lose and they fall further in the standings, I don't need to see the highlight and I don't need to see a tweet above it going, oh man, it's amazing that Rafaela even had a chance at this play. I don't care. Make the catch. Like, make the catch, and then I'll be amazed. Then I will sing his praises from the mountaintops as long as you want. But at the end of the day, the reality is, because again, we live in reality. The reality is he didn't make the catch. The ball bounced off his glove and two runs scored. The other reality is, as I pointed out on the other show, he has 8 errors this season. 8. For a guy that everyone wants to say is like, you know, people, when he plays center field, oh, he's the next Jackie Bradley Jr. Not yet. As much as I hated Jackie Bradley Jr., he didn't make that many errors. And at shortstop, it was like, oh, he's going to fix the shortstop problem. No, he really hasn't. He's not hitting and he's making errors. It's no better. He's no better than David Hamilton right now, really. So it's just this celebration of, well, you almost had it. And the celebration of, well, you know, just wait until the future. Like, it's going to get better. No, it's like, I don't care about 2025. I don't care about 2026. I care about right now. They're losing games right now because of stuff like this. And it's just the constant need to find something to celebrate. And I'm not telling you, you have to be a miserable prick your entire existence. Like, okay, if you want to be an optimistic Red Sox fan, fine. But like, can we at least live in a little bit of reality too? Because like, he had another tweet where it was that same game. He showed the diving catch. It's like, yeah, he made a bad error earlier, but look at this great play. It's like, no, don't qualify it. He made a bad error. Yes, he made a good play later on, but made a bad error in that game too. Like, don't gloss over the bad stuff and just highlight the good stuff because, oh, people are too down on the Red Sox and everyone's too negative. They're like a couple losses away from being back in last place again. So it's just, I just, the refusal to live in reality and this, you know, insistence on we have to celebrate the almost and live in this fantasy land where everything's better than it seems. It's just starting to really get on my nerves. Maybe it's because I'm getting older and I'm just getting more crotchety and cranky in my old age. I don't know. But it's like, I just can't deal with that stuff. It's like, why don't you tweet about all the mistakes they made instead of just, you know, finding the one good play and then, you know, on top of it, you know, tweeting a highlight video from AA Portland. Oh, you know, so-and-so mashed another home run in Portland. I don't care. It's Portland. Doesn't do anything for me. Is he coming up to the Red Sox tomorrow? No, then I don't care. Like, it's just stuff like that's driving me up a wall. So, Jeremy, what do you got on that?
Well, I'm a Milliken guy. I consume 98.5 and Zolak and Bertrand on a daily basis. First things first, Rafaela has to be bifurcated into the shortstop and the center fielder. Because the shortstop gets to balls that no one else gets to, but unlike the manager when he played middle infield, like Alex Cora, the ball was hit at him. It was going to be an out. You know, wasn't great, had very little range. Rafaela gets the balls that you like most people don't get a glove on. So I bifurcate the two, right? I'm not talking about Rafaela, the shortstop. That's not part of Milliken's take. And I'm a Milliken guy. I am. Where I have an issue is the justification on advanced stats at all times. War plus and this and that. And it's too much. Like, some of baseball has to be evaluated and analyzed on the eye test. Right? Like, it just has to. Like, he got his glove to the ball. He should have made the catch. Now, with all that said, I saw the behind the plate camera angle of that play. And the fact that he got his glove on that ball is insane. It was insane. The ball was slicing away from him immediately, and he covered an insane amount of ground. Good jump, great angle, gave himself every chance to catch the ball, but then ultimately didn't. So he's so exciting to watch. Like I can, you know, be in the kitchen making a snack while he swings and misses at a third strike on a slider outside the strike zone. But his ability to just athletically play defense and get to balls that other people can't get to is honestly truly special. And I love him in center field. And I think he could develop into a really good shortstop if he makes the everyday play. But with that said, I'm with you. Milliken turns everything into a positive based on his understanding of the advanced statistics, which I don't personally. I'm an eye test guy, so I don't get into all that stuff. And it can be a little tiresome, especially amongst the losing, to justify some things that frankly, specifically on plays, affect winning and losing. So, you know, just some commentary about the player. I do agree with you that the application of the advanced stats is a bit much at time from Milliken, although I do like the radio and podcast personality.
Terry.
He's just a guy that ignores reality. Like he tries to choose his own reality and, you know, push it on everyone else. It's kind of like, you know how maybe not everybody, but most people have that friend and his girlfriend's cheating on him and he just refuses to accept it and pretends it's not happening. That's Milliken here. He's just pretending that the ugly destination isn't going to be where he ends up. And we have to sit here and just watch him, you know, try to paint a different picture than what's really the actual scene at the moment. So, you know, and then as the season goes and we end up in the same old place that we've ended up in for the last 5 years, it just hurts his credibility. It just hurts his credibility going forward. You have to call it for what it is. You know, we have done really well by not having a dog in the fight and just, like I said, calling it like we see it. That's where we win. You know, we're not out here trying to out-homer all those other Red Sox podcasts. So, you know, if he always wants to paint a positive picture and ignore the elephant in the room, fine.
Yeah, I mean, I have respect for him in terms of the job he does on 98.5, or respect his baseball opinions, you know, to a point. But man, the advanced stats, like, stop shoving those down my throat. It's just way, way, way too much. And as Jeremy said, especially when the team continues to lose and continues to fall further down the standings, it's just nauseating.
Just very quickly, Milliken is a byproduct of the game going towards analytics over baseball sense, eyeball tests, feel for the game. You know, he's the modern fan. So, I mean, it's a little bit of an indictment on, like, where baseball's at, where it's just, and I'm a nerd, so I can say this, but, like, run by nerds.
Yep. I think your point about the modern fan, they spend more time looking at Fangraphs than they do actually watching the play-by-play of the game. I firmly believe that.
I mean, like, look, you have a player who's like in a slump. He's 0 for his last 12, 4 Ks, you know, hasn't hit a ball over 80 miles an hour in a week, but he's got a OPS at this number versus lefties on day games where the wind's blowing to the southwest. Like, I almost swore. Give me a break, right? Like, can we apply some like feel to the game, which is like just such a big part of baseball, because there's so many upswings and downswings. Like, and Milliken is a byproduct. I don't remember his exact age. I believe he's in his 20s. He's a younger guy, and he's a byproduct of where baseball is and where it's going to continue to head.
Yep, I agree. And unfortunately, you said you're an eye test guy. I kind of am too. And his podcast buddy there, Jared Garabas, says if you're under the age of 40, you should never use the words eye test when talking about baseball. So there you go.
I don't have to agree with Garabas, although I also like him.
Milliken could go back to last year's record and team and data and say, well, yeah, they were a last place team, but they really performed like a second place team. Like that, it would be the same thing. It would be the same useless crap. No, they finished last.
And they finished last, but their expected standings was first.
That's perfect. Well, I mean, that's what I was trying to say, Jason. And I'm
so tired of that, Terry. And I really truly agree with you. Like, cross sport reference, like Cleveland fans, like it would have been different if Donovan Mitchell played the whole series. And like, I'm not going to get in. He's a really good player if you're not a basketball fan. But like, what are we doing the what if for? What does it change? Nothing. The Celtics are advancing. Cleveland's going to the Bahamas or to play golf, whatever your proclivities are. Like, why are we even doing that? If you finish last, you finish last. Like, if so-and-so stayed healthy, we would have, based on his war, we would have been here. No. No one 20 years from now is going to look back and say, well, if so-and-so was healthy because he had a war plus, and a defensive rating against, like we would have finished like fourth or third. Like what does it matter? That's not what history is going to dictate. We finished last. I just can't stand that alternative theory to reality. Anyways, I went on a diatribe there. My bad.
Preaching to the choir, my friend.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm going to give you a chance to go on another diatribe because Jeremy, you are up. You have a very interesting clown take this week. So the floor is yours, sir.
In my opinion, easy pickings. All right. So here's how the text reads, because I'm going to read it.
The tweet.
Red Sox had momentum. We're getting to Jason Adam. Cora killed it. Could I read this in the alternative, if you don't mind, Jason, if it went the other way?
By all means.
Yeah. Jason Adam has elite stuff. And Cora failed to apply the rules of baseball, Cora killed it. It is a do if you do, do if you damn situation. And I'm a Cora guy, so I'll admit the bias. But he did the right thing. They violated the rules. And if the crew chief knew how to handle the situation and knew the rule, it would have been a significant advantage because the 5-minute break where the reliever was able to warm up would not have taken place. And I know he's going to get on the mound and have extra time, not limited to the 8 pitches you're otherwise limited to. But the situation was in part dictated because the crew chief didn't know what the bleep to do with it. And then they go to New York. And New York presumably wasn't watching the game or didn't know what the rule was or had to fast forward the tape at 10x to see how many times they made a mound visit. He did the right thing in the best interest of the Red Sox, and that's all you can ask a manager to do. If you're going to just second guess everything they do, you're going to have tweets like this all the time.
Well, if Cora didn't come out, it seems very unlikely to me that anybody would have picked up on the fact that, number one, he crossed the chalk, so that made it a mound visit, along the baseline there. And then I just don't think it would have been questioned at all. And if my thought as all that was unfolding was Jason Adam, he's having a very uncharacteristically bad inning here. He's not locating. They're getting to him. I kind of want to see how it plays out. And the other thing too, as it all unfolded, I'm like, well, okay, Devers is on first. You want to pinch run him. You want somebody with speed so that hopefully they can go either first to home or get to second base, you know, whether they steal or not. And so that wasn't going on. And then Cora gets his way and the reliever was warmed up. I'm not even sure how critical that was beyond 8 pitches, but his pants just went straight to the ground when the comebacker happened. It was the most anticlimactic, ending that there could have been.
So the rule with a middle of the lineup guy is he's got to be at second base to score on a base hit. So you don't pitch run for him. in that situation, I don't think until they get to second base, then you do. So I disagree with you there. I think you got to keep him in the lineup. If it does go to extras and his spot comes up and it's Hamilton, you're going to be criticizing him the other way.
Well,
again, it goes back to the
– Romy Gonzalez was at the plate, though. I mean, it's not like, you know, Mike Trout would be a real – exaggeration, but it's not like second best hitter is coming up. You know, I think you have to get to second base. You want those two runs coming in on the next hit. I don't think
the,
you
the,
can
the generalized rule is he's got to be on second base and then you pinch run.
There were two outs, so
McGuire, then I get it. But if it's your best offensive player with no second place anywhere nearby, you have to keep him in the lineup in case he comes up in the 10th or 11th inning.
I want the runner stealing so you can get the two runs on one hit, then chance it and try to get two hits.
So then what? So then he gets thrown out at second and you're going to criticize Cora for stealing in that situation?
No, I wouldn't. Yeah. What game ended where Wong threw him out? It ended the game. I thought that was a play that had to happen. Was that the National Series, maybe?
Oh, I think you're right. It was Abrams who got thrown out, wasn't
okay.
it?
Okay, yeah. So it's a ballsy move, but I think you have to do it.
So it goes against... I disagree with you, Terry.
If there was one out...
I disagree with the whole take. So getting back to the original take, okay, the Devil Rays wanted the closer in the game. There was no one warming up. Why would you not take the opportunity to get the best bullpen arm out of the game and something less than that into it? Again, all you can ask the manager to do is put the club in the absolute best chance to win the game. And that's what he did. Now, it didn't work out, but you can't ask him to, you know, foresee a one hopper back to the mound. I mean, that all you can do is, again, based on feel, eye test. I disagree with Carrabas. I think eye test is a big factor. And I'm sure the analytics, if we're going to go into it, probably favor getting the closer out of the game in favor of a lesser arm. And that's what he did. I don't think anybody across any discipline of baseball analyzing the game and the situational probabilities is going to disagree that what he did was in the best interest of the Red Sox trying to win the game. Now, if you want me to go on a diatribe, I can, because I don't love that player up in that spot. And that, again, goes to the roster and ownership, and I'm not going to go there. But
well, it's not much different from Jansen being up. He got the first out via a strikeout, and he fell apart with only one out. Adam was falling apart with two outs, and I just think I'm always going to be in favor of aggression. If the shoe was on the other foot, I want somebody with speed on first to take second base. That's my preference.
You just went back to the first base situation?
I'm talking, it goes back to pinch running Devers and how I opened up the take.
I have a third clown take, Jason. Jerry just compared Kenley Jansen to Jason Adam.
Well, I mean,
you can't be doing that either.
Jansen had been pitching pretty well lately. So.
Yeah, but again, I test.
Terry, let me ask you a question. I'm not going to answer with a response. I'm going to answer with a question. If Kenley Jansen never makes another appearance in a Boston Red Sox uniform, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm good with it.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
If Kenley's pooping his pants and Alex Cora is out of mound visits and forgets about it, crosses that chalk, and you're a Rays fan, are you pissed or happy that Kenley's coming out of the game?
Who's still in the bullpen?
At that point, it would have been
Bernardino, Martin. Yeah,
no,
they're not.
No, because they were already burned. But I'm just
Martin already pitched. Yeah,
I'm just saying
who's left. Slayton, I'd take him.
No, he was burned.
No.
No, he's gone. It would have been
2.63. Yeah, you Boozer pitched two. We're in the 18th inning. Boozer 2.63.
You could have had Boozer. You could have had
Weissert. Maybe 1.56. I mean, all these guys couldn't have thrown.
Well, I'm just saying. I when a guy's losing it, I want that's the guy I want to face. That's the guy I want to face.
I think. My biggest counter to this is, what did we accuse Alex Cora of so much last season? It was that he had sort of one foot out the door, so to speak, and that he was asleep at the wheel too much, that he wasn't doing everything he could to win every single game. He kind of looked checked out at times. He was, you know, whatever, right? At least that move in that game, it was him being engaged. And I think in a way, what I saw it as was he probably sat there and went, you know, it's not a huge deal, but my team just fought back to tie this game up. And my stupid closer who doesn't want to be here, who hates us, gave up the game. I need to go up there and like cause a stink because he probably sat there and went, I could let it slip because, you know, we're getting to this guy and, you know, it's not a huge deal, but, you know, I'm going to go out there and start yelling. I'm going to get fired up and I'm going to, you know, accuse the Rays of, you know, not playing by the rules and all this. And just, I think he was just trying to light a fire a little bit because again, like we as fans were so dejected after that Kenley inning. Imagine how the players felt, like, especially with the way things have been going, like they have a chance to salvage a split in the series. They were down in the game. They fought back. And then here comes your dumb closer who hates everyone and hates Boston and doesn't want to be here, and he gives up the game. I think Cora was just like, he saw an opportunity. The Rays broke the rule, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go out there and get fired up. And maybe it lights a fire in them. Maybe they, you know, if I show them that I care this much about this game, maybe it just gives a little bit extra. And especially when you got a guy like Romy Gonzalez at the plate, you have to do everything you can to try to sway the winds in your favor because he's not a good hitter. He's not. He's most likely not going to come through in that situation. But I saw it as Cora just kind of pulling out all the stops. And I'm not the biggest Cora guy. But for me, I was like, I didn't mind it. It took too long. That's not his fault. That's the umpire's fault because they don't know how to do their job. It shouldn't take that long for them to count. How many mound visits? One, two. Like, shouldn't have taken that long. But I saw it as him just trying to give a damn, which I don't mind.
I thought he was trying to get run. I thought he was trying to get thrown out. I don't remember the last time in really any sport where a manager just bullied two separate umpires and won. You know, but you have to know the rule. Like, the clown take here could be, I mean, Terry's a really good clown take in my humble opinion, but the clown take could be like, know the goddamn rule. Like, how do you not know the rule? And I thought Euclid, by the way, looked kind of stupid. He had to admit he didn't know where it was on the scoreboard that counts the mound visits. So he's like confused. I'm like, know the rule. You got the book in your pocket. You're writing everything down except for basically the counts. Every mound visit, the book comes out, tick. Like, know the rule. O'Brien knew the rule. Like, it's just ridiculous. If they know the rule and they apply it in real time, I'm not saying it's a different outcome, but I don't think Cora thought there was going to be a 7-minute delay in application of the rule, and where the Rays figured they were going to lose. They knew they were going to lose, and all of a sudden they get a guy up who's ripping his warm up. He's ripping through his warm up, like. And plus, I mean, I already read Terry's alternative tweet if it went the other way. So he texted it to me, so I knew which version it was going to be.
Gotcha. Well, I'm good with it. I'm comfortable with my take. And, you know, it ended two pitches later after Cora got his way, regardless. So, did we lose Jason?
Jason does appear frozen.
Yeah, he's muted. I'm just going to run with it anyway. So, I'm going to clown perhaps one of my biggest haters on Twitter. His name is Bill Colriss, and his Twitter handle is @SoxSouth. And if you were to put the Bastards Twitter handle or simply the word Cushman in with @SoxSouth into the search bar, you're going to see all of his tweets, you know, about me. And you're going to notice a very unhealthy obsession over the last several years. And so that's who he is. And this is how he came at me a couple weeks ago. I'm going to get more into the history, but as many of you know, we're trying to, you know, increase our presence on YouTube. And we've got a new crew in place, and we're working on that right now. So he screenshotted that because he's got me blocked. I'm pretty sure I have him blocked. And the reason why I blocked him is because he deletes his tweets. And once you do that and you stop taking accountability, I lose respect for you, and I'm just going to block you. I'm not going to engage with you. But so he comes at me with this. He screenshots the ad that we're looking for YouTubers, and he says, if you're going to go through the trouble of buying a microphone for this, which was a prerequisite, we all have to have microphones so our audio is good. He says, if you're going through the trouble to buy a microphone for this, just start your own YouTube channel. Dude has 600 subscribers. So here's the thing that Bill doesn't know, and perhaps some other people don't know, is when you're a part of a podcast like this, part of the fun that goes along with it isn't even when we're on the air recording. It's the collaboration. It's the behind the scenes. You know, we're all reacting to breaking news together as it breaks, as we post the Jeff Passan tweet in our in our group chat, or war room, as I call it. You know, we've created a culture behind the scenes, and it's just a fun thing to be a part of, you know, far more fun than just doing it on your own, as Bill suggests. And I wouldn't enjoy this if I was doing it on my own. I like having Jason, Jeremy, Charlie, Cody, in the group chat, and it just makes it more fun. And I think the daily collaboration, it makes us all better at what we do. We make each other better. And so, you know, Bill wouldn't have the first inkling of what it's like to be a part of something like that. So a couple other things that, since I'm doing this and I'm probably never going to mention him again, on this podcast, as I lose my notes right here. Nope. Jason's internet crashed, by the way, so I don't know if he's even going to be back. Oh, here we go. So one of the big reasons, Bill comes at us is because we're on opposite ends of the spectrum. Bill was a card-carrying member of the Bluminati, and for 3 years defended everything Bloom did vehemently. As we complained about the constant failures, he would, you know, the obsession would be in, would be in full swing for him. And I want to share a tweet. So this tweet was posted by Bill the day Bloom got fired, and in fact it was exactly 31 minutes after Chris Cotillo was the first person to announce Bloom's firing. This is what Bill said about me. Somewhere near Myrtle Beach, Terry Cushman just paused the Hitler documentary he was watching so he could high-five himself. So this is a terrible day for Bill because his boy gets fired and Bill is realizing every tweet that he posted for the last 4 years was garbage, didn't come to fruition. And he had to, the way for him to cope with that was to call me an anti-Semite baselessly. And that would be just like me, and this is baseless, and I don't believe this to be true, but it would just be like me saying Bill Kolres of North Charleston, South Carolina, is a child molester and molests children. That would be the same level of baselessness. And I don't go at people that way. I don't make stuff up. I don't do anything like that. So, you know, it's pretty vile, and we talk about Tyler Milliken not coping with reality. I think Bill, you know, suffers from the same problem. And Bill's background is he's apparently a writer. He does editing. He edits manuscripts, and this is his profession. And since he's creeping some stuff on me, here's something from Bill's bio on his website. He says he places the same level of importance on crafting a single tweet, and this is for another company, as he does editing a full manuscript. Well, Bill's Twitter account, his baseball one, has 41,600 tweets, so 41,600 tweets, and nobody follows him. Nobody interacts with him. His engagements are... or his views per tweets are well under 1,000. So of all 41 something carefully crafted tweets, Bill, you haven't gotten anyone to give any crap whatsoever about what you have to say. You're just an obsessive troll, and everything you've tried to do as far as Red Sox content creating has failed. Okay. And we just did 300,000 downloads in 2023. Not sure what we're on pace for this year, but I suspect we'll exceed that. And keep up the obsession, Bill, because you're not getting anywhere with it. And like I tell you and I tell all of our haters, you're our best form of currency. You guys talk about us the most. You promote us the most. And we're only going to get bigger. And that's exactly what we've done year over year over year. So... That's my response to Bill. And Jason, I'm sure would have loved to. Jason doesn't like him either, and you know, but unfortunately, his internet crashed.
I have no input here. I don't follow this individual. I don't really know much about him. I will say that baseless allegations about people being prejudiced is just, you know, not something I endorse, and I don't think it's right. And if you don't have facts to support it, I think you should be punished for, you know, making those sorts of statements, you know?
Well, Jason, you missed the whole thing, but I went into the anti-Semitic thing that he threw at me. I went into how he was a card-carrying member of the Bluminati, and, you know... Anything you want to say about Bill? I think he's figuring out his audio.
You guys hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. My expected internet didn't work out the way it was supposed to. So there you go. That's what you get for trusting expected things. I've had a few interactions with Bill, not many. The most famous one was he accused me of saying that I hate Wade Boggs, which I never said. I said I hated that they retired his jersey. I don't know Wade Boggs personally. I didn't really watch him play too much. I watched him more as a Devil Ray than anything else. But he's always had an axe to grind against our podcast, particularly against Terry. And he's just another one of these, you know, screenshots our tweets instead of directly tweeting back at us. He always like goes back and forth too when it comes to the Red Sox. Like, one minute he's like super optimistic and he's like, oh, I can't believe anyone's doubting this team. You're a moron if you did, blah, blah, blah. And then the next minute he's like, I'm quitting Twitter and I'm not watching the Red Sox for a week. Like, don't talk to me, you know, whatever. I'm just going to go coach my little league team. It's like, all right, dude, like don't like get mad at everyone else for being negative on the Red Sox if you're going to like throw a tantrum every other week, because deep down he knows that they're not that good either. Like he does, but he puts on this front of like, no, like, you know, I'm one of the optimistic ones. You're all just beneath me because, you know, you're all just so negative and I don't have time for negativity in my life. It's like, all right, like get over yourself a little bit, dude.
Yeah. You know, you always say, Jason, you know, certain people reek of smartest guy in the room. And that's definitely Bill. And I mean, you had another guy, HVT, if you're on Twitter, you're probably familiar with him. Same as Bill, same side of the spectrum, hardcore pro Bloom. So far out there, you need a space shuttle to get to where they are on their respective side of the spectrum. And, you know, Bill, you know, used the anti, you know, accused me of being anti-Semitic. That was how he had to cope with being wrong for 3 years. HVT's way of doing it was simply selling his Twitter account and running away forever and not facing it anymore on Twitter. Bill just, you know, just chooses denial and, you know, lies to himself in his own head to, you know, to ignore the fact that he was way off. And I mean, we had the year that we had last year because we were right. We were close to the pulse of what was happening and what was about to happen. And, you know, that's credibility. That's why people, you know, download our podcast and want to hear what we have to say.
Yeah, 100%. So I know I jumped in late, but any final thoughts before we wrap things up here?
You might have to DFA your internet.
Yeah.
or at least option it. Send it to Worcester.
Well, I mean, it only had a 5% chance of working, Terry. I mean, it's amazing that I even got on this call in the first place, you know? So.
Good night, guys.
Yeah. So with that, we will wrap up the show again. Apologies for the technical issues, but another episode of Clown Takes in the books. So everyone enjoy the weekend series against the Cardinals. Hopefully it goes better than the last series did. And we will see you all next week. Take care.